I'm done doubting Russell Wilson. But his ability to stay calm and lead drive, whether it's week two or the playoffs or the Super Bowl, he always puts them in a position to be successful.
And Russell takes the snap, drops back. He's going to throw down the middle. He's got a man. The ball is caught.
Game over,
baby. It is a touchdown. The game is over. The Seahawks are going back to the Super Bowl.
This is Hawks Talk.
Good morning, Seahawk fans, and welcome into another edition of Hawks Talk here on CSN. I'm your host, Joel Gunderson, coming to you the day after the game of the year so far, not just for the Seahawks, but perhaps the entire NFL in general. The Atlanta Falcons and your Seattle Seahawks came together yesterday as two of the hottest teams in the league, Atlanta especially. It was a battle of the league's number one offense in the Falcons and the number one defense in the Seahawks. Now, last Thursday in my weekly preview, I said this battle would come down to the simple head-to-head matchup of Russell Wilson against Matt Ryan. Whichever quarterback found the most success would, in all likelihood, come out the winner. As it turns out, that wasn't the case. Ryan had the better stats day, passing for 335 yards and 3 touchdowns. Wilson had 270 yards and no touchdowns. But in reality, this game came down to momentum. And the team that had it last, Seattle, came out on top by a final score of 26-24, assuming you've watched the game and knew that already, no spoilers here. This game was a tale of two halves, and it was almost bizarre how different those two halves were. Seattle came out defensively on a mission to start the game, an absolute mission. In the first quarter alone, they sacked Matt Ryan 3 times, one of those resulting in a fumble and a subsequent Seahawks touchdown. The entire first half was a complete domination by Seattle. Atlanta would enter halftime with just 86 yards of total offense. And again, this was the number one offense in the NFL coming in. Seattle's offense wasn't a juggernaut in that first half by any stretch. They only had 169 yards. But the Seahawks defense was so stifling. If it wasn't Michael Bennett and Cliff Avril harassing Ryan, it was Bobby Wagner. If it wasn't anybody in the front seven, it was Earl Thomas in the secondary. Earl Thomas was all over the place yesterday, all over, and it would help, and he would come back in the second half and repeat his performance as well. We'll get into that down the road a little bit, but Thomas had to be, because Seattle was without Cam Chancellor, and I'll get to his importance in a bit as well. But without Chancellor, it was going to be up to Thomas to help neutralize the Falcons' attack, and most specifically, Julio Jones. Now, if you've been living under a rock this season, Jones has been the best receiver in the NFL, and to me, it hasn't even been close. He's already had a 300-yard game. And the funny thing is, outside of that game, his stats have been mediocre, but I call him the best in the league because even when he hasn't been catching the ball, he has turned himself into the ultimate, you have to be on him all game, even if he's not getting the ball kind of guy. You often hear about those guys and how they directly impact the game on defense. It happens all the time. In their primes, guys like Deion Sanders or Darrell Revis or Seattle's own Richard Sherman, those guys would defend only maybe 2 to 3 balls a game, and that was it because no one was throwing against him. But just by being out there, the entire half of that field would be shut down, and offensive game plans would have to be completely altered. Well, that's what Jones has become on offense. He not only occupies the corner that's covering him, but oftentimes he'll take up the full attention of one or even two safeties. I think on the broadcast yesterday, they said if Jones looks like he was created in a lab, that's because he was. And it's probably the perfect description, because if you could create a prototypical wide receiver in terms of size, speed, hands, route running ability, it would be Julio Jones. And unfortunately, the last few years, he's kind of been almost wasted in Atlanta a little bit as him and Ryan have struggled and that team has struggled. But you're really starting to see now the full realm and the full scale of just how good this guy is. And Jones would finish the game with 139 yards and a touchdown, really dominating, especially in the second half, as I mentioned. But he was consistently pulling members of the Seahawks secondary over, especially in the third quarter. That was the problem. In the first half, Seattle was getting so much pressure up front that Ryan had no time to do anything in the pocket. He was getting a second, maybe two, before having to bail on all his progressions. Jones was a non-factor. Devontae Freeman, their running back who's been on a tear running the ball as of late, he was a non-factor. The first half was textbook clinic tape of how to run your defense for Seattle, and they were doing it against the best offense, statistically, in the NFL in Atlanta. Seattle actually took a 17-3 lead into the half, and really, looked like they were going to blow this thing wide open. And on Thursday, when my preview article came out, I said, I viewed this game as a potential NFC title game showdown because these two were entering as probably the hottest, but also overall just that they looked like the best two teams in the conference. But at halftime, it was really looking like a laugher. Seattle was so dominant that it looked like there was no way Atlanta had any chance of turning it around, especially Ryan and that offensive line. They looked like they were completely overmatched. Michael Bennett was doing whatever he wanted to, especially in that first quarter. Like I said, they had three sacks alone in the first quarter. But then halftime hit, and everything seemed to change just like that. During the third quarter, all of the Atlanta hype started to really make sense because Matt Ryan had time. The offensive line was sustaining blocks. They were opening up holes for Freeman, who, like I said, has really been on a tear the last few weeks. And most importantly, Ryan had time to establish Jones, which helped open up the entire offense. Now, you couple those with the fact that Seattle's defense was non-existent. On two separate occasions, Falcons receivers were wide open for touchdown catches. And as fast as it looked like a runaway Seattle win, just like that in the second half, before they could blink, they were down 24-17. From 17-3 to 24-17 in less than a quarter. And it was, in all reality, probably the worst quarter of Seattle football that we've seen in a long time. The unorganization in the secondary was, to me, the most baffling part because, yes, they were without Cam Chancellor, but it was oftentimes Richard Sherman who was making mistakes. And if there's one guy in that secondary that you don't expect to make those, it's Sherman. Because not only is he your best cover corner, he's probably your smartest overall defender when it comes to seeing the field, knowing where guys are supposed to be, not just himself, but every other member of that secondary. He knows everything, every in and out, and oftentimes he was the one that was out of place. On a touchdown pass to Lavine Toyolo, Sherman was, he simply covered the wrong guy. I mean, he literally left Toyolo streaking down the sideline without a guy within 20 yards of him. Now, mishaps happen, especially in the secondary. A guy can slip, or he turns his head for a split second and gets beat by a faster receiver. But what Seattle, and Sherman specifically, were doing was really amateur coverage. Now, whether it was a case of a one-day slip, or if things came so easily in the first half that they pulled off the gas a little bit in the second half, or if it's an actual crack in the armor, we don't know. But that's something to definitely keep an eye on going forward because there's been a few occasions this season where after the game, the members of the secondary have come out and said that they were not happy with the way they either finished a first half or finished a game. Now, this was the longest stretch we've seen because up to this point, it's been a drive or two that they've been unhappy with. But what Atlanta did in that third quarter was really eye-opening. Now, it has to be taken with a grain of salt because, again, this is the best offense in the NFL, and they've done this over the course of the first half of the first quarter of the season. So it's not a fluke. It's not a one-game thing that Atlanta's been doing. They are that good, and Matt Ryan is that good, and Devontae Freeman is that good. But this is definitely something to keep an eye on going forward for Seattle. Heading into the fourth, down 24-17, Seattle would score on a Christian Michael touchdown, but the extra point was blocked, so they actually trailed Atlanta by one, 24-23. But as has been his MO throughout his career, Earl Thomas would again save the day. He picked off a Ryan pass before Steven Hauschka kicked the game-winning field goal. Now, I say Seattle escaped this game, and I truly mean they escaped with a 24-26 win, because 26-24 win, excuse me, because Atlanta actually had one more possession after the field goal by Hauschka. And on fourth down, there was a pass that was thrown up and intended for Julio Jones. It came down incomplete, but what was blatantly missed by the refs, in my opinion, was Richard Sherman completely locking in Jones's right arm and pulling him to the ground. Now, I don't know if the ref missed it or if it was maybe some home cooking, but Atlanta should have had the ball in Seattle territory with time to go and four full downs and only needing a field goal to win. So, again, every season is going to have games like this where the next day you kind of sit back and say, wow, there's no way we should have won that. And I think tomorrow Seattle's going to wake up and kind of feel that way because as bad as things were in the third quarter and getting away with that blatant pass interference on fourth down to end the game, this was it for Seattle. And as good as they were in the first half, the third quarter was that bad. The second half in general, when you combine the offense and the defense, was that bad. Now, they can get away with it in game 5 of the season. They won't get away with it later in the year. This is not something these are not errors they can have or performances they can have as we get into the playoffs. Now, we're a long ways away, luckily, and the schedule sets up nice going forward, as we'll talk about in a little bit. So, shouldn't be a problem, and you'd like to think they'll get it fixed, but a little concerning heading into the day, even after the win. Afterwards, Pete Carroll did sit down and talk about the win over his former defensive coordinator, Dan Quinn.
Well, that wound up being a whale of a ball game. Falcons did a great job to get back in it and had a big second half, obviously, throwing the football, getting down the field, making some plays, and gave us all that we wanted. And fortunately, we did well early. They had a really nice first half and then came back when we needed to in the fourth quarter to get the stops we needed to get it done, and we made the one kick we needed to make. So very difficult game, but I'm fired up. Dan's team's playing like crazy, and they're hard to beat today, and it was a great match.
What'd they do differently in the third quarter?
They just kept throwing it, and they hit a couple plays. We made a couple misplays on things, and they took advantage of it. And they were really, really good. I mean, Julio's great, and Ryan is great, and Sanu, and those guys, they all can play. And that's why they've been kicking butt with the offense, all season so far. It's plain to see. And you got to go all day long. You can't just. They're not going to lay down in the second half. They came back firing at us, and made some good plays. Well, I thought Earl had a great game. Yeah, he really just made some great breakups, and he just looks like he's full speed, on fast forward kind of the whole time, and really fired up for him, and making the hits that he made, and then we get a ball tipped up. Sherman gets the ball tipped up, and he makes a big pick to give us the chance right at the end on the sidelines. Cam Chancellor called it. He came, told me, looked me right in the eyes. He told me the whole thing was going to happen, and he needs to tell me next week too. But some really, really good play, and it's a really tough fought, hard fought ball game.
I mentioned Russell Wilson finished with 270 yards. Didn't look great from a health standpoint, and I'll touch on that here in a little bit as I go over the three things I learned. But little concerning coming out of the bye week. He still did not look like he was physically up to where he wants to be and up to where he needs to be. But he took the mic and talked as well.
Well, I just kept telling the guys on the sideline, just stay the course, a lot of game left, keep believing in it. And everybody kept saying the same things, and we found a way. And that's a huge thing. The defense came up big, getting that interception, we came up big again. And we hung in there against a very good football team, got tons of respect for their football team. They're a great team. And we were able to find a way. And that's ultimately the key to success. I think the will to win, and I think that's what we have. Well, you're talking about the last third down order?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it was a great play by Alex. He found a way, chipped, and got out and was able to find a way to get it to him. And that was a huge play. I thought he had a great game today. Kristen Michael had a phenomenal game. I thought the offensive line did a tremendous job. There was only one sack. I put that on me. And I thought they did a great job. I thought they were physical against a very active defensive line that does a lot of different stunts and a lot of different things. And the receivers came up big when we needed to. So it was a great game. You got to love winning.
On that play to Collins, was he chipping and going to release, or he was supposed to be pass blocking?
He was supposed to be kind of pass blocking and then late release, potentially, depending on what the look was. He did a good job, made a good decision in ball play. And that's what you love about him.
Richard obviously got sort of emotional on the sidelines there for a while. What were you trying to do during that time, I guess, in terms of kind of calming him down or calming everybody down?
Well, I was more focused on the offense at the time because, they had, two big drives, obviously. We got tons of leaders on this team. And there's tons of guys who are passionate and dedicated to the game and want to do perfect every time. And sometimes things don't go right. And for whatever reason, they're passionate. We're passionate. We want to be the best. So we want to find a way to not make mistakes or not let something happen or not let them get the momentum. And they were able to, and we were able to rally the troops, obviously, and get back together again and just make sure that we stay focused on the moment because, they made a good play, whatever that was. And you come back and, Richard's, in my opinion, the best cornerback in the National Football League. He's a guy that, makes so many great plays. You see him make that. I think he was the one make the tip ball, and then Earl catches it for interception. I mean, that's the way you have to play the game, and you have to to stay locked in on the moment, and he was able to be able to do that, overcome that situation and be able to do that. So that was great.
And finally, Richard Sherman, after his definite up and down day, he was another one of those guys that in the first half looked like he couldn't miss. In the second half, as we touched on, had a lot of miscommunication, mishaps. He took the mic as well.
It was just miscommunication. Kelsey hasn't been in defense that long. We tried to make a new adjustment and just miscommunication, frustrating play.
What caused you to be so angry? It's one thing to be mad at blown coverage.
Because it was blown coverage. We should have never gave him points. We could have stopped him. We could have held him to nothing. And they scored on blown coverages. The one Sanu caught was a great play, but the other two were blown coverage.
Did you want to follow Julio on every single play? Did that play into it at all?
No, it's just the coverage. It's just the adjustments we make, the calls we make and the adjustments. And there was miscommunication on that play. Things didn't get communicated the correct way. And that's how it happens.
Was it on-field communication, like audible problem?
Yeah, it's audible within the play.
Were those two touchdowns down the left sideline, were those similar concepts that they were running, or were they
different? Well, one of them, they ran two tight ends vertical and ran Julio underneath, and we're in read coverage on the outside, so we got the receiver man-to-man, so it needs to be an adjustment on that play. But I guess they're similar in makeup a little bit. One of them was an underneath route, the other one. I guess they're very similar because 81 ran in and came back out.
Continue to be upset the rest of the game because
you
look like you were kind of by yourself.
I was just chilling. It's so frustrating to give up two bogus touchdowns.
Do you think that anger had any impact on subsequent drives or plays?
No.
What calmed you down, Richard?
I just was chilling, hanging out. I'm a ball player. That's how you play. You play with passion, so that's how we go. So it's nothing new.
How did you feel you guys played as a defense?
We played great. We got stops when we needed them. A couple busted coverages, like I said, miscommunications. Few times they motioned guys over and we didn't adjust correctly. Things like that, things that we'll clean up in the film room.
Were they more diverse in the third quarter? Did they come out after halftime and show you different things?
No, they came out and served the exact same thing. We tried to make an adjustment and they found the mistakes.
Richard, another team, that display of emotion, it might be a distraction, it might throw people off. You guys been through enough together that it doesn't faze you?
Yeah, we're a champion ball club. It's nothing.
Dan Quinn seemed to think there was interference on the last play. What did you?
I thought there was interference on our offense on a few plays, and they didn't get it. So, it was just one of those games they let us play.
You feel like you got away with Quinn on that one?
No. I feel like we won the ball game.
Some other teams, you slam a helmet and yell at coaches, you might be benched. What is it about this team that allows you to?
Because we're champion.
Richard, how important is it for you to play kind of right on that edge?
It's very important. It just shows how much you care.
In your mind, is it over, or are you going to have to, talk it out with everybody?
No, we'll go over this film and make the adjustments, and then we'll move on.
What do you think of the way Earl Thomas played today?
I thought he played a fantastic game. I thought he was on course. He made some phenomenal hits. He played like Earl Thomas.
What happened on the pick play, on the interception?
They ran a slant. Julio dropped it. I tried to catch it, tipped it up, Earl caught it.
Richard, we've seen this team before have miscommunication breakdowns. Every team does over the course of a year. But what was it about this one specifically that got you so frustrated?
Yeah, because it was something we discussed. That's mostly what it was.
Was it, is that base summer stuff or something for this game?
It's something for this game. So some, we hadn't had enough work with it, so it was just one of those things.
Richard, Bobby Wagner at the plate. How can you assess his play? What
do
you think?
I have to look at, did he lead us in tackles again? Yeah, I would guess he's always somewhere up there. It's either him or KJ. Played a phenomenal game. He looked like he lived in the backfield. Our D-line played an outstanding game. They deserve a ton of credit. They came in here running the ball for a pretty good tilt, and they didn't run it for much today. Our D-line isn't easy to move. Our backers are disciplined and smart. So it was a fantastic ball game by him. I think, he's just playing to a standard. No, we just had a couple mistakes, like the running back to the flat, just guys just missing out. Things will correct.
With the crowd noise, does it affect you guys a lot with the loud crowd we had, especially in the fourth quarter?
We're pretty used to it. We've played in 6 years of it, 7 years for some guys. You know, that's not much of a factor, but just guys got to communicate, look each other in the eye, and get the calls.
How much time does it generally take for a cornerback to get this defense to the point where it's sort of non-verbal and you just go?
Well, I mean, it takes years. It takes years. And you know, sometimes you got, you know, when if guys come out there and we just haven't been out there together, you know, it's just a different feel, and we have to get a feel for one another.
You guys have talked about how that continuity has helped so much. How much of a challenge is it when someone like Kelce has to come in maybe at the last minute?
It's a little bit of a challenge, just a different feel, different adjustment, but he did a great job today.
You were talking to Deshaun Shea a little bit in the locker room. Was this part of the conversation about
it? I mean, it was just an extended conversation about everything that went on. He was talking about some of the plays that happened with him and things that he has to work on throughout the game.
So after the Seahawks' 26-24 win, here's three things that I learned as we head into next week. Cam Chancellor may be the most important member of the secondary. His absence on Sunday was felt in a big way, especially in the second half. Chancellor isn't the most precise cover guy at safety. He's not a technical guy. But the impact he has, the fear he strikes in opponents, is not something that can be replaced. He's the enforcer. He's the intimidator. And when he's not out there, there's a certain confidence that is gone. Now, they looked good in the first half, and perhaps that led to a belief that things would just kind of come easy. But as the second half showed, missing even one member of this unit could be dangerous for Seattle, especially when it's Chancellor. Two, as I touched on it, Wilson is clearly not 100%. Now, we heard a lot during the bye week that he was as good to go as could be. He felt great, etc., etc., and you wondered if it was just speak or if it was the actual truth. But the few times he had to roll out of the pocket on Sunday, it was really evident that that's just not the case. Now, he's never been a burner, and he never will be. He's not a guy that's going to outrun players. But even the times he found himself with Green in front, he either hesitated to scramble, or when he did, looked like there was a major hitch in his step. And now, because the bye weeks are out of the way, they have 11 straight weeks where they will be playing games. And you have to wonder if after the bye week he still looks like he did, what's he going to look like 6, 7, 8 weeks from now as he keeps taking a pounding? And they do play a couple good defenses coming up here in the next few weeks. So it's going to be real important for that offensive line, who is starting to look a little bit better, that they keep him protected and keep him upright. Because if he takes more hits like he did in weeks 1, 2, and 3, they really could be in trouble. And three, I think other than the November 10th game in New England, Seattle will probably be favored in all of their games going forward. And I think many times they're going to be big favorites. Their schedule sets up perfectly. If they could take care of the games they're supposed to, and even if they drop a game or two they shouldn't, there's no reason they can't head into the final game or two of the season with the division and potentially the NFC wrapped up. They have games coming up at New Orleans, the Bills at home, which could be tough, and then that November 10th game at New England. That's the biggie. But after that, it's really, there's not a game on there that you look that strikes fear. They have the Eagles at home. They go to Tampa Bay. Carolina comes to Seattle. Carolina's a mess right now. They have to go to Green Bay, but as Green Bay showed yesterday, they're vulnerable. The Cowboys knocked them around pretty well. And then two straight games at home, Los Angeles, struggling Arizona, and then go to the 49ers. So 49ers right now look like, other than Cleveland, they may be the worst team in the NFL. So it's really the perfect opportunity if they can stay healthy and really get through the next 7 or 8 weeks to go in those last few weeks and give some of their stars an opportunity to rest up before the playoffs begin, because I really think they're going to have the NFC West locked up for sure. But I think there's an opportunity for them to have the best record in the NFC and clinch home field throughout the entire playoffs. Well, that's going to do it for this week's Hawk Talk. We're here every Monday for the remainder of the season going forward. Now, next week, Seattle heads to the Bayou to take on the Saints, and we'll have a full recap here on CSN, your home for Seahawks coverage in Portland. Thanks again for joining.